Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed Issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
You are now staring into the twisted mirror.
I'm driving to West Bumblefuck, Maine, every few minutes glancing over at the opened envelope sitting on the seat to my right, like it's a passenger. Just a few months ago, at least looking in, I lived a life that looked a lot like the one in magazines. Not some lowbrow rag like People, Poverty's idea of wealth. No, I'm talking Architectural Digest or Vogue. An old moneyed wife, well-bred kids who were sent to the best schools, Oxford shoes and loafers and Burberry trench coats in the fall, an apartment on the Upper East Side, a summer home in the Hamptons, a type of wealth that pretends it's unassuming in its neutral colors and timeless aesthetic, all the while being served on hand and foot, donning clothing and accessories like a secret language. Some schlep wouldn't understand that the entire outfit I'm wearing was fitted for me by a world-renowned tailor. But to the people who count, it's a wink. You're safe with me. You don't have to pretend or apologize for spending a third of the average annual salary on something you'd wear to a casual summer get-together. I was happy, I guess you could say, in a realistic way, with the understanding that things come at a cost, and no matter how much money you have, sometimes things cost more than you could ever afford. And if you're greedy, like me, you take those things anyway, so used to getting what you want. But eventually, your bill comes due. If you're a keen listener, then you heard me when I inserted the phrase, at least looking in, because underneath the family photos out of a Ralph Lauren editorial, the summer trips to the Amalfi Coast, the high society fundraisers, there are sacrifices that have to be made. Jolie, my wife, was an heiress. You might not recognize her name, but she was born into the kind of money that runs the world. The kind of people who own and rub elbows with the celebrities you worship, but don't have to earn it by going on press tours or signing photographs. Those actors, musicians, they actually have to work for their money. Like my wardrobe, her kind of wealth was not interested in fame. And if you knew her, it was because you spoke the secret language. She was the only child of Hans Wilbur Gustafsson and Genevieve Boucher Gustafsson. The Gustafsons were so rich for so long it was hard to even say how or why. They were aristocracy so long ago, but their money had grown in so many industries over the years, it was just in their DNA. The kind of rich that could never truly lose it all. Genevieve, Jolie's mom, was a model, but she too came from rich blood. Generations of industry and wealth intermingled in her veins. Jolie's ascension in the modeling world did not consist of looksies and sharing apartments with girls barely able to afford anything as they worked their way up the ranks. She simply had to phone her aunt, who knew the editor-in-chief of the world's leading fashion mag, who knew all the heads of the biggest agencies. All long and lean 5'10 of her had her pick. Jolie was a thoroughbred. Tall, slender limbs moved like a willow in a soft wind. Her posture defined by years of the finest ballet lessons money and status could buy. Her father's blonde and blue blended with her mother's dark features to create a blend of light and dark. Long, black, glossy hair over gray eyes. She was stunning and elegant in a way that made her stand out in a sea of tryhards at the gala where we met. She wore a simple black dress. It flowed over her like she was some sort of goddess. The back was open all the way down to the small dimples at the base of her spine. Her skin glowed as if the diffuse lighting of the ballroom followed her like a spotlight. Her black hair was long and loose, tucked over her shoulder. Her face was framed by wispy bangs. She wore a bright red lipstick, but it seemed like the rest of her face was bare, save for a few sun-kissed freckles. Not a thing extra than what had to be done was done. As if this party, a huge deal for me at the time, was something she barely had to make an effort for. And yet she was more stunning than anyone there. The gala was a big fundraising effort for my company. I worked in banking, where the kids who grew up with nothing but ambition went to ride the express elevator to wealth. I was making good money, but nothing to compete with the kind she had, and certainly I did not have the breeding. I didn't stand a chance, but I got to where I was by faking it until I made it. By tapping into the kind of boldness found in explorers and the rare self-made man. I did have one bit of currency that money can never really buy, at least not in the way that you can be born with it. I don't mean to brag, but I've always been a good-looking fella. And I don't mean cute. I mean I'm 6'4 with a chiseled jaw, with the frame of someone who has played a sport their entire life. Clear skin, thick dark hair, great teeth. You think I might have been created in the same breeding lab that Jolie was. After we got together, people would remark at what a beautiful couple we were. It didn't bring the envy you might expect, no. People marveled at us, wanted to be near us. I couldn't really tell you how I got these looks. I don't know where I came from. I was adopted by a nice, boring family. Well, actually, first, I was adopted into a wealthy East Coast family, a successful spinal surgeon and his housewife. Again, this wasn't Jolie's type of wealth, but I would have been happy had they kept me. But then they decided at the ripe old age of 7, when they unexpectedly conceived, that they simply didn't need their new toy anymore. I was young enough to be cast aside. They probably told people they sent me off to some special school. I don't know how they pulled it off, but in those days it was much easier to make people go away. So I was shipped off to the Midwest on a train, to a new, boring, plain family. It may sound crass to your modern 1980s sensibilities, but that's what used to happen back in the day. Families, usually poor ones, who couldn't afford their kids, sent a spare or two on a train, and some family who could use the extra body would take the kid in and adopt them. I hear kids now complaining about how hard they have it, how adults wouldn't understand. They have no idea what it used to be like for kids. How most of my friends had a sibling who died of a disease like polio or TB. How kids could just be put on a train and disappeared. Like that. The cheek of my first adopted parents, who had plenty of money, sending me off with a bunch of dirt-stained poor kids whose families had no other choice. I presume they wanted me as far away as possible so they didn't have to confront the shame of it. And I spent every minute after that trying to get back to that city until, as a young man, I did. I watched Jolie from across the room until the conversation she was having broke and I made my way over to her. Her drink was empty, and I grabbed two from a passing tray. I thought you might need one of these. I caught her off guard. She looked me up and down, her eyebrow slightly cocked in suspicion. You were watching me? She said. Watching is a strong word. That would imply some will. I promise I have been trying to do anything but stare. She laughed, but not in a "you're so cute" way, more like a mockery. It was when I noticed the slightest snaggle tooth of one of her front incisors. She had all the money to fix it, and the fact that she didn't was unexpectedly sexy. Its outward angle pushed her full red lips into this perpetual pout, as if she was always ready for a kiss. She was way over my league. This was a woman who needed for nothing, who literally had it all. There was nothing I could give her that some other extremely good-looking man of her pedigree couldn't. Suit yourself. I shrugged and guzzled down one glass, then placed the other one to my lips as I spun and took my first step to walk away. Isn't that one mine? She asked as she reached over and snatched a glass away, with her slim fingers completely bare down to her trimmed fingernails, except for a thin gold ring on her thumb. Even when she snatched the glass, it looked like a beautiful piece of choreography. I cocked my head back. I suppose it is. She downed the glass just as I had, extended her arm and deposited it on an empty tray coming from her rear, as if she had a sixth sense for those things. I haven't seen you before, she said. You must be with Fosters and Hemsley. To most people, my job would be impressive, but to her, I might as well have been the help. Yeah, I work in asset management. Do you like it? She asked. I shrugged. I like the money. Money. She chuckled to herself, her voice trailing off as if it was the least important thing in the world. There are things I knew instinctively even then, before I'd become aware enough to articulate them. What I said and did, it wasn't strategic, at least in the conscious sense, but I guess that's all social interaction. Most of us can be taken by flattery or money or affection, because those are things that are hard for most of us to come by. What we lack, we crave. With someone like Jolie nearly drowning in all of those things, more of it would simply cloy on her tongue, like someone stuffed the gills in lobster being forced to take another bite. What she lacked was lack. Being in sales had honed my intuition. The only way to impress someone like her was to make no overt efforts to do so. I'm sure money must bore you and the many people for whom this event is just another Thursday. I broadly turned my body away from her, using it to gesture to the chatting attendees in their tuxes and couture gowns. I took another sip from another glass I'd picked up and then tipped it toward her to single her out. But I assure you, it means a great deal to those of us who have gone without. The look on her face. I saw it, she was completely stunned, flummoxed, no witty retort at the ready. Well, I didn't. She craned her neck to the side to relieve some tension, but quickly regained her composure. I didn't mean any offense by that. I guess I'm used to people at these things who have always had it, constantly craving more. I made an assumption. My apologies. I nodded and cracked a sly smile. I accept. Sometimes an awkward moment shatters the ice better than any common thread ever could. She started asking me questions about my job, my life. We drank and drank, and our eyes never left each other's gaze. She was fascinated by my story. I was honest about it all. How I was given away, twice. How I put myself through school and came out here to build a new life for myself. As the night wore on, I invited her to sneak out with me. With my tux jacket over her shoulders, we grabbed pizza and ate on a park bench. In each other, we found our escapes. Mine into a life of the extreme wealth and status I had been chasing. Her, well, I guess she found something real. A real person that could ease her internal conflict about her godlike resources. A person who knew what it was really like out there. I wish I could say it lasted forever. That the knight swept the princess away from her tower and rode off into unending bliss. It was good for a while. We had Britta and Hans, and there was laughter and fun. Trips all over the world. The whirlwind of exclusive parties and get-togethers. Staff attending to our every need. Yacht trips, helicopter rides to our summer homes at the Hamptons and Martha's Vineyard. Fancy charity events to convince her she could balance all the things on her side of the scale. I did the charity stuff with her, but it was more for the social currency than anything. As far as I've always been concerned, I am the charity. I am the poor kid who needed the money. Let people like Jolie throw their dollars at causes. I was clear from the very first day that money mattered to me. I wanted that life. She could deny it all she wanted, playing dress-up as some sort of bohemian, but she did too. She just wanted not to want it. She thought galas could launder her guilt. After a while, working for it didn't feel so appealing. I never worked because it was fun. I did it as a means to an end. And through our union, I had achieved it. You fill a rat with sugar water and it will sleep at the start of the maze instead of doing the work to get to the end. First, I told myself and her it was because I didn't want to work for someone else, so I started my own firm. Convinced her to allow me to manage our money. But then it didn't go past that single client. Then I tried a real estate company and got bored of that. A few more ventures funded by my dearest fell to similar conclusions. Eventually, I stopped working altogether. Why should I have to when she didn't? What's the point of working for money when we already had more than we could ask for? I'd rid myself of the puritanical brainwashing that work had meaning. It was an insult to the poor, really. Who dreamed of winning the lottery and quitting their jobs. Jolie didn't argue much when I stopped working altogether, but something changed gradually in that time. I didn't notice it until it was already in its late stages. She stopped looking at me the way she used to, stopped with the random kisses, the gentle hugs from behind, and then the sex. I started to feel like less of a man. She didn't want me anymore. I wasn't her knight. I wasn't a real person who lived and worked in the real world. I was a mooch, just like all the others. Just like her. I felt it in the way she would turn away just slightly from my touch. She was tolerating it when she used to lean into it and practically purr. The way I would catch her looking at me, barely hiding her veiled disgust. I felt like I needed to get her back, but I couldn't bear another job. It's like having Wagyu in your fridge every day and yet being told you should eat Spam for dinner every night. So I started gambling. That's how I would make money. I could have the thrill and still provide. I probably don't have to tell you how that went. How I blew through embarrassing amounts of money. How I used my financial expertise and control of our finances to move money and accounts around without raising any red flags to her. You might wonder how someone could lose so much. But you're probably playing at the craps table with a handful of chips. I gambled with kings and titans. Millions could be lost with the single deal of a hand. Jolie couldn't be bothered to deal with something as inconsequential as money. It had always been there. Daddy had taken care of it before me, and then I swooped in to take away the stress. She hated numbers. She just wanted to make pottery, go to fundraisers, take care of the kids. With her parents gone and no siblings, I ran it all. I hired the attorneys, the accountants. I made sure the bills were paid. As long as her world kept spinning, she didn't ask questions. I know you think she must have been an idiot, but I meant with my whole heart to take on that task nobly. I never had anything other than the best intentions. She put her wealth in a man who worshipped her, who wanted to take care of her. We can't predict how we will change, how things can change us. Gambling is a black hole. It swallows light and its pull can disappear things thought too enormous to be consumed. My love for Jolie, my honor, and much of her fortune. It makes you believe you are trying to do the right thing. Just one more hand, one more night. I can fix it all. I can make it right. But the hole is so dark you lose all sense of scale, of how far away you are from the event horizon. A win seems huge, but then you lose tenfold. You can't escape it once you've gone in. I lived with a constant, invisible hand around my throat, moving funds, balancing checkbooks, leveraging assets, carefully revolving loans to pay for our children's schooling, the upkeep of our properties, our vehicles, the staff, the lifestyle. I had to do this without ringing any alarm bells, not only for Jolie, but to anyone who had a vested interest in our holdings. Our family's budget rivaled that of many large businesses, and like any large business, you can only fudge the numbers so much before something doesn't pass the sniff test. As desperation closed in on me, I tried to fix it by going back to old habits. With our kind of money, your gambling doesn't always have to manifest at the craps table. It can be throwing tens of millions at a project that promises to be a major investment, only for it to go under. It makes it easy to hide in plain sight when your gambling looks like business. Every decision, though, is birthed from desperation, and it makes you impervious to prudence. At night, as she slept by my side, it felt like there was an anchor sitting on my chest. Sometimes it would feel so heavy, I could hardly breathe. I waited for the inexorable moment when the delicate balancing act would tip, and it would all come tumbling down. When those invisible fingers wrapped along my throat would finally tighten their grip. On the outside, we were still just as beautiful, just as happy. Our ever-smiling, popular kids were off at boarding school, only home for the holidays, shielded from the building tension in our household. Hans is a 6'3 lacrosse star at Andover and probably would end up even taller than me. Britta, she has her mother's beauty and some brains on her. I think she is on every possible school committee, and she's taken to her mother's empathy for the less fortunate, sometimes to a preachy degree. Rich, right? Having your kid, who has known nothing but a life of ease and fortune, lecture you about what it's like for people out there. It's strange how a woman I thought of as such a force didn't confront me during this time. Maybe I did hide it well, or maybe she couldn't fully admit to herself that she was a fool for ever loving me, for letting an outsider inside her walls. She wasn't so foolish as to have not had me sign a prenup, but what did that matter when I had all of the control of the finances in our marriage? After a while, she started to drink silently in dark rooms as I spent more and more time outside of the house. It was a little receipt that caused the hand gripping my neck to clench. I was usually careful, but I used an older jacket and left it in the sitting room, and whether it fell out or she was finally ready to face it all, she found it. Ugh. That letter, it's just sitting there as I drive up this rural main road, a lush green only broken up by gray sky. There's a perpetual damp up here, the kind that settles into your bones, that can only be remedied beside a crackling hot fire. The letter is inside an envelope, tucked back into a frayed slit on its side. The sender's address is my current destination. About a week or so before Jolie confronted me, it appeared in our mailbox, addressed to me, William Butler. Dear William, I hope this letter finds you well. I am your biological mother. This is a secret I alone have held for the past 38 years, since your birth on March 3rd, 1945. There has not been a day that has gone by that I have not thought of you. I would like to meet you and explain everything, if you would allow me. Sincerely, Marjorie Hamilton Ward. I held it in my shaking hand, my mouth agape as I stumbled back into the reading chair in my study. I stared at the letter, not reading the words. I had never really considered the idea that I would ever really know my biological mother's identity. Adoptions were blind, and my first adopted family knew nothing of my origins. They weren't even sure what state I was born in. I was delivered to their door by a priest who arranged these things. That's all they told me. William Hamilton Ward. That would have been my birth name. I liked it. Who was she? The name sounded vaguely familiar, but that could have simply been a trick of the mind. I mumbled something about a meeting to Jolie as I rushed out the door and headed to the New York Public Library. What I found as I scoured articles on microfiche validated everything. Why, I felt so out of place with my second family growing up and craved the life I fought to maintain. I came from something. I was an heir. The Hamilton Ward family, my blood, had wealth and prestige. Like Jolie, my birth mother was the only child of her parents. But she had become reclusive after her father's death, and not much was known of her. There weren't many photos of her, but one article did reveal a family photo. A stern-faced mother and towering man on either side of a teenage girl. The black-and-white newspaper print didn't offer much in the way of visual detail, but even then, I could see I had her in me, her dark hair, her piercing gaze. And she looked like her father. From what I could gather before she faded into obscurity, she never married, never partook in the kind of high society elbow rubbing so many of her ilk could have. Her mother was a stern Catholic and had a reputation for piety, confirmed by her joyless glare into the camera. What I found out was the family's wealth was vast, and she was the only heir to the estate. From what I could tell, she now lived a simple life in obscurity. No articles in magazines, no appearances at galas. This was a gift, a sign. But I didn't want to blow it. I had to approach the situation delicately. Coming to her with my hand out could be a turnoff, no matter how much guilt she held. But if I could get in her good graces, if she would treat me as her son, then I could fix things with Jolie, refill the coffers enough that she would never find out all that I had lost. Maybe I wasn't trapped in a black hole after all. But I didn't have the time. Because a week or so later, I came home to my wife sitting in her dark study, a nearly empty bottle at her side. I could feel it in the air that something was wrong. More than usual. I didn't ask. I just stood at the door and waited for her to speak. She raised a piece of paper. A receipt. This fell out of your pocket. A receipt from a year ago for a necklace? I opened my mouth to say something, but she didn't give me a chance. I don't want to hear it. It's not for me. Not for Britta. I know. I went to the bank. I wanted to track down your spending on this woman, or are there many? Then I found out that whoever she is only a tiny fraction of your failing as a man, as a father. The debt, the accounts, the school, our kids' school. I saw the bill in your desk. Then I called. They say you haven't paid for this semester. Where is all of my money? She stood as she shouted. I tried to assure her that it would all be fine, that she didn't understand what she was looking at. We had money all over the place, that we were not broke, that I had something big coming. But she wouldn't listen. It was then I realized I couldn't fix us. The look in her eyes, the loathing, it was all lost. You were always after my money. All along, you pretended that you loved me, that you appreciated the little things. A shared slice of pizza on a park bench. But no, you are empty. You stand for nothing but excess. You're not a man. You're a blood-sucking tick. I could replace every last penny I had lost, but I could not replace the ire she felt for me. I could not buy her love back. I may have finally snapped, We were all putting it out there, weren't we? How she's the fraud. How she thinks she's not greedy, but only greed would lead someone to have that much. The only difference was I admitted it, and I didn't feel sorry at all. How she used me, her little collector's item, someone who could make her feel more like a real person in place of her lack of identity. How from the very moment we met, she has been in denial about who she is. She scoffs at her friends after dinner parties. She mocks their cluelessness about the world, all the while she's sitting right at the table with them. That her fundraising parties were all for herself, for her ego. Nothing was stopping her from writing a fat check. She didn't need to throw a party for that. She yelled about leaving her modeling career for me to build a family. I said I never asked that of her. She had all the opportunity and money to be whatever she wanted. It's not my fault she was useless. I love her. I do. And I said those things to wound her. I knew they would. I never really felt that way about her, or better yet, even if I did, I didn't care. I liked talking shit about people with her. I liked that she at least tried to care. I didn't need her to perform for me the way I had to for her. Jolie demanded a divorce. She promised to expose me for the fraud I am, an interloper of high society. Jolie was my ticket to admission, and once this all would come to light, I would be an outcast. My kids would learn about who I really am. I just couldn't go back to the bottom of the ladder. Even if my birthright were to be revealed, it would be tainted by Jolie's accusations, and if my birth mother were to learn of this somehow, it might ruin any chances I had of inheriting the family wealth. So I panicked. I decided it was best to start over. Jolie was the kind of rich that could never really become poor. However thoroughly she might have dug into our accounts, she didn't know about the hidden ones, the offshore ones, the ones, I swear to you, I started with our entire family in mind. But I needed an insurance policy, so I took that information with me when I disappeared. Yes, I left my family. I left them with the apartment, the houses, anything I couldn't fit into a bag. So they were not penniless. Sure, she would have to sell it all. She would have to spend a ton on lawyers to untangle the mess I left behind. Who knows what would be left after settling the web of debts she had acquired through me. Some which were not necessarily above board. But she would never miss a meal or wonder if she would end up on the street. So here I am, starting my new life as Mr. Hamilton Ward. People go on the run with a secret identity, one they craft from their imagination, but I am doing it in reverse. I am going to hide under my true identity, one that is a secret to everyone but me and the woman who birthed me. If I played my cards right, I would inherit the estate and become the sole heir upon her death, through natural causes or otherwise. My birth mother's reclusiveness was a blessing. Fewer eyes, more time to plan in the shadows. After Jolie confronted me, I made my plan. I went upstairs to my office and stared at the address on the letter. This would be my destination. The kids would be arriving home the next day for spring recess, so I didn't have much time. I packed only the most essential items and drove under the cloak of night, switching license plates with a similar-looking vehicle in a small town about halfway to my destination. I'm not too far now from the Hamilton Ward family compound, according to the map. It's shockingly dreary up here. There's a constant wetness in the air, a fine mist that never lets up. Though it's mid-April, it feels like it could be late November. The closer I get, the more isolated the roads become. The interval between seeing another driver gets longer and longer. This whole thing feels like fate. For my mother to reach out to me just when I needed her. Like a second chance being gifted to me. You might think I don't deserve it, but I think I never got a fair shake. You might even say people like Jolie and even my children, as dearly as I love them, have never known true adversity. Something, some force, decided to rebalance things. What I did was a gift, a true window into a world outside of their protected existence. How could they be grateful? How could they truly know how good they had it and how bad it could be for others without at least a taste of adversity? Jolie scoffed at me when I said I loved money in the way only someone who has never had to work for it would. Someone who has never had to worry about checking her bank account for a balance. Someone who would just hand over the reins to someone without so much as bothering to glance at a bank statement. Her generous acts came from guilt, pity, not empathy. She couldn't truly empathize. She didn't have the tools. I almost passed the turn to the estate. The wooden signage is completely overgrown, but I see a corner peeking out from under a thick coat of vines. I slam the brakes and hit reverse. It's too cold and I'm too tired to get out of the car and pull off all the overgrowth, but I know this has to be it. Notice then that there is an open iron gate. It's almost completely hidden by the undisturbed warp and weft of the ivy weaving through its bars. I look again at the map, note the last cross street miles back. This has to be it, I mutter to myself. It'll be dark in an hour or two, so I make my decision to commit and drive along the dirt driveway. As I creep along, I am not welcomed by a well-tended, evenly green, manicured lawn or pruned English garden that accompanies the kind of wealth this woman should have. It was easy to see this once may have been the case, perhaps decades past. What now flanked me were ruins, decorative concrete benches along the path overgrown with moss, some with broken trunks on the ground lying exactly where they fell. Ponds and barely trickling fountains blanketed with algae. Though some flowers, clearly remnants of a once impressive garden, dot the land, the landscape is wild. Nature has taken over. A fox scurries away from the beam of my headlight, a limp hunk of fur hanging from its mouth. A family of deer dine on grass just feet away to my right. Two thoughts cross my mind in this order. First, that my dearest mother, through some financial misfortune, may no longer be able to afford to maintain this property, and that I am glad to have kept the offshore accounts. Second, I have heard of these things before, like those Kennedy women who hold up in their mansion and let it fall to disrepair. This could be a good sign. It could mean she didn't spend much, that she is mentally unwell and easy to win over, that she could be easily parted with her fortune, and it was accumulating handsomely wherever her parents had left it for her. I hoped desperately for the latter. I pull up to the massive mansion, almost completely covered in ivy. I curve the car along a circular driveway with a grand fountain at its center. The fountain no longer runs, but there is a pool of filthy water in its basin, collected from rain, coated with algae. That's when I notice the front door is boarded up and has been a long time, again evidenced by wild growth. I mutter curse words under my breath as I feel for the envelope at my side. That's when I see it out of the corner of my eye. A little light from a much smaller house on the property. It would make sense that a woman living alone might opt to move to a less overwhelming structure. I park the car, take a deep breath, slide the letter into the inside pocket of my jacket, and step into the wet chill of the early evening.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
A stone path leads the way to the modest home. While the rest of the property is neglected, behind the little wrought iron fence surrounding it is a well-tended garden, though not in full bloom. I pull the latch and let myself in. Suddenly, I am there, a few inches of wood likely separating me from a woman who had been a complete mystery to me just weeks ago. Sometimes it felt as if I was never born, like I just appeared, like there was no real history to me. I think back to that fundraiser that years ago changed the course of my life, how I stood across the room watching that trophy I had no business even dreaming of winning, how it turned me from a nobody into more of a somebody than most people could ever dream of, how I'm back there, in some ways, trying to win the love of a rich woman to give me worth. I grab the handle of the door knocker affixed to the head of some sort of goddess and firmly tap it against the door 3 times. Through a window, a shadow moves about. Is she frightened? She must not get unexpected visitors, especially around dinner time, and there isn't another house for miles. Would anyone even notice if someone came here, killed her, and took over the property? Just as I am about to call out and inform her of who I am to quell any fears, I hear a series of latches and locks, clicking and clunking. My heartbeat picks up. The door slowly cracks open with a pained moan from its hinges. I can't see much, just a sliver of a mature face, a blinking eye. Then the door opens. She's a hunched thing with gray hair pinned up in a bun, wearing an old-fashioned floral dress under a thick cardigan. Her delicately lined face is framed by thick glasses. She seems much older than I would have expected for a woman who, I presume, had me as a teen. A smile takes up almost half the real estate of her face. Before I can say a word, "My boy, my precious baby boy." It catches me off guard, as naturally my plan was to inquire about who she is, to introduce myself as her son, and so on. "Ms. Hamilton Ward?" I ask. She waves a dismissive hand. Not to you. You can call me Marjorie. Marge. Maybe even Mom? How did you know? I ask. You look just like him, she says with a touch of rue in her tone. Please, come in. I wasn't expecting you, so... She scrambles to her kitchen where I hear glass and silverware clapping against each other. Despite the disrepair of the estate, the house itself isn't in squalor in the way I might have expected for a recluse. It's cluttered, maybe even dusty and a little damp, but in a way that is familiar and inviting. It embodies the kind of unpretentiousness and cozy I have seen my peers spend many thousands trying to recreate in their English countryside cottages. I follow her into the kitchen where she is setting down a few cups. There's a hearth running a fire. I am running some hot water for tea. It's always so damp up here, it seeps right through your sweaters, she chuckles. The whole thing is surreal. I don't know what I expected, but this wasn't it. There isn't even an ounce of resistance or apprehension coming from her. It's more comforting than I expected. As much as I enjoyed my previous life, felt entitled to it, I always felt like I was a character in a tableau, placed into it, but not truly part of it. It already feels like I'm home, maybe for the first time ever, embraced completely with no conditions. I pull out a chair and sit at the small table. I smell something else, something savory, and glance at the oven. I was just baking a shepherd's pie. I hope you came with an appetite. I nod. Truth is, I'm famished, but I'm not here to talk meat and potato pies. Any preference on the tea? I grow my own teas in the garden, and the greenhouse is out back. Dealer's choice, I say with a hesitant smile. I received your letter, I say to her back while she fiddles around with her tea stuff. I place it on the table like I need to prove this to her. She stops and turns her head half to the side. I gathered this much. There's so much I want to say. So many times I have thought of this moment, and now that you're here, I'm almost afraid I don't know where to start. I find sipping tea helps me relax. Would you allow me to finish preparing it so we can sit here uninterrupted? Of course, I understand. Would you mind if I gesture a finger to indicate having a look around? I saw photos and other items that seem to have held family history, and I'm curious. Please, yes. On the mantle, there's many photos of your grandparents. God rest their souls. I stand up and make my way to the living room. There's a rocker with a half-completed knitting project resting on a table at its side. There's a small television. The mantle is covered in photos to show the story of a lonely life. Endless variations of a stern-faced couple with a girl who, over the years, grows into a pretty young woman, but then a solemnness strikes her somewhere in her teens, as if their austerity snatches her spirit. Despite the well-kept gardens and buildings in the background, they are shockingly plain for people of such wealth. I wonder how growing up with them would have shaped me. I like nice things. I like nice clothes. I like parties and lavish vacations. What's the point of having all this? It's outright hypocritical. It's a farce. The illusion of simplicity in front of million-dollar estates, of eschewing materialism while hoarding an entire GDP's worth of money so that it sits there, providing no value. It's hard to imagine I would be different than I am now on a fundamental level. That I would be as puritanical, or I guess whatever the Catholic equivalent of that is, as my lineage might suggest. I wonder how much of who I am is a product of my environment and how much of it is an inheritance. Some of the photos are so old they look more like paintings than photos. There is one of a baby in a white dress, perhaps a baptism. Tucked behind all the others, one I almost missed is that of a young woman with long dark hair in a garden. She has a hint of a smile, unlike all the other photos. Also, unlike the others, she's not standing like she's posing for a redo of American Gothic. The dress she's wearing is a light color, and you can see the knees are soiled from bending in the dirt. She's holding a pair of shears in her gloved hands. I guess it explains the nice garden outside. I wonder why, of all the places in the world, they would choose this area as their home base. Of course, it's beautiful in a salty, stormy, rugged kind of way. But it's so far from the action, from other people. But that's the point, isn't it? I bet she gardened because what else was there to do around here, especially in those days? Son? She calls out from the kitchen. A bit familiar, but this is a good thing. I enter the kitchen as she's pouring me a steaming hot cup. I thank her and take my seat as she pours one for herself. I'm sorry to show up so abruptly. This was an impulsive visit. She nods, blowing at the rim of her teacup. She reaches out her hand across the table and rests it over mine. I'm just so happy you're here. Do you know anything about our family? I proceed with caution. I don't want to appear too interested in the family money. I didn't have much time, but I found some things. I likely know what anyone might from a quick glance at a newspaper article. She seems unsure of where to start, opening her mouth to speak and closing it a few times before a flood of words and emotions come out. I want you to understand that I never wanted to give you up. I had no choice in the matter. This life. She glances around the modest kitchen, though it's clear she's referring to the immense wealth. It's like a prison in some ways. My father was a stern man, a complicated man. His life was about work. His father came on a boat with not a penny and started the business. He instilled those strict values. My mother, she was a very pious woman. They tried for others, but I was the only child that survived through birth. They were all I had. They believed in work and God. I don't even know why my father acquired so much money. He hated most rich people. It was as if he accumulated as much as he could just to keep it away from others. I hope in silence that she hasn't donated all of her wealth to charity, but I don't have much time to dwell on it as she goes on. I was young and sheltered, and of course that is a recipe for rebellion. Oh, I did try to break free, but before the bra burning and the flower power or whatever all that was, a young woman couldn't put up much of a fight. Anytime I tried to do anything other than be a perfect, silent girl, I was sent to a place. A Catholic home for wayward girls. You'll never meet a meaner person than one of those nuns. She laughs nervously to herself, and her eyes catch mine as if she's suddenly remembering that there's another person in the room. Oh, look at me, just rambling on. And as I said, I don't know where to start. I hope I don't come off as asking for pity. I just wanted you to know I didn't choose any of it. I nod. I believe her. I guess my reading on the photos was right. She fidgets awkwardly like she has become aware of her body all of a sudden, and pulls the sides of her cardigan closer together. I don't get much company here these days. She takes a careful sip of her tea. Do you not like tea? She nods towards my cup. No, I like tea. I was just waiting for it to cool down. I take a few sips to make up for my previous lack of interest. I do like tea, not as much as other things, but my disinterest wasn't that it was tea. It's that my mother, someone who was a figment of my imagination, is real and in front of me. I no longer recall who I imagined growing up. Seeing her now has erased all the previous images I had concocted. She's nothing special, at least not anymore. Just a lonely old woman, it seems. It makes me wonder if any of the well-heeled people are as special as they think they are, or is it just the money that makes them seem that way? Without her, without the family name, no one saw me as special. But I knew inside I was. That has to count for something. Though, so far I will say she is surprisingly warmer than I expected for a recluse who has let her family's estate crumble all around her. Well, what about you, son? Tell me about your life. Are you married? Children of your own? How did you find me? I ask more abruptly than I had intended. The question does throw her off, only for a fraction of a second, before I see her eyes shift from surprise to acceptance. Well, those records were sealed, but I found a way to access them years after you were taken from me, from the home where they put me, where I gave birth to you and where they snatched you away before I could even look at you, hold you. Her hand, still on mine, begins to tremble and she pulls it away, as well as the swell of emotions that was threatening to take over. Then I hired someone I trusted, someone my father used to hire for work like this, to look into you after that. I was appalled when I learned that you had been moved from the first family to another. So, she pauses and there's a surge, a low rumble like the stirrings of an earthquake. Callous that they would do such a thing. It was harder to find where you ended up next, but eventually he found that, and then it was easier from there. I take another sip of the tea, trying to be a good guest. So then you know that I have a family. Surely that came up. I know what he told me, but I want to hear it from you. I'm guarded, the part of me that is a hurt and confused boy. But the man who is here now understands that he has to put that aside to get in her good graces. Besides, that was years ago. I don't get out much, don't read the papers or watch the news. It makes me agitated. So I don't know about anything since. Why did you wait, if you knew who I was then? She finishes a sip of her tea, and I mirror her. Now that it is cool enough to drink, but still hot, it's quite good. I guess I needed to find the courage. I wasn't sure if you'd even want to hear from me, if you could forgive me for letting them take you. But I'm not sure, to be honest. I wanted to, trust me, but I needed to be ready for you, and I suppose I wanted to give you some time with your young family before I delivered such impactful news. Well, there's Jolie, my wife. She's... My chest tightens. Lying used to come easy, but suddenly my throat goes dry, my head a little out of sorts. We met when I was working at a bank fundraiser. She's, well, Maybe our grandparents cross paths because she does come from a successful family as well. But she doesn't care for those things, or at least she thinks she doesn't. And then there's... I start to feel queasy, thinking of everything I left behind, everything I abandoned, that I would never see Jolie or the kids again. It was too late. Britta. She's bright. She looks a lot like you in your photos from when you were young, but somehow also like Jolie. I guess it's the dark features, like there's a storminess. I used to think she looked like me, and I guess she did, but... My heart rate picks up, my head swirls for a moment, the words are hard to find. It's really that I look like you. The woman smiles. Are you all right, son? You look pale. Yes, it's been a long day. Few weeks, actually. The drive out here, I guess it took it out of me. There's a lot to process. She watches me with sympathetic eyes. Eyes I longed for growing up. I'm here now, she says, reaching across the table. Again. I wasn't here for this, to try to find something that was far too gone to be reclaimed, but something about her loving gaze, her tender, wrinkled hand on mine, it makes me feel secure. It makes me feel like I am safe, like this was the right call. She would keep me away from anyone trying to find me. There's my son, and he's a star lacrosse player. Handsome, charming. I think of him, and there's another disorienting swirl. Popular? What the fuck is going on? Now he looks like me. I guess the Hamilton wore jeans are strong. And pure. You look so much like your grandfather when he was young. I must have missed those photos. My stomach cramps for a moment, causing me to shift in my seat. Do you need to phone them? Let them know of your arrival? No. I suddenly find I have lost the energy to muster up a lie. They don't know I'm here. I wasn't sure what to expect. I remember my immediate goal. I am in hiding. No one can know I am here. Does anyone know about me, that I'm your son? When I found out about who you were, I promised I wouldn't utter a word to anyone before I told you. Even the man I hired has since passed away. This is our secret until either one of us decides otherwise. It appears you feel the same? I nod. My father, I say, you haven't mentioned... My tongue gets tied up. I can't seem to find the words to finish the sentence. They all seem so far away. The swirl in my head comes back, and this time it's powerful, and it spins into a vortex. I try to get to my feet, plant myself on stable ground.
Son, are you okay?
Mother asks, coming to her feet as fast as her frail body allows. I try to get my bearings, but the room tilts on its axis and then sharply in the other direction, like a boat in a stormy sea. I stumble from side to side like someone would on its dock. I grab at the table for balance, only catching the tablecloth, and then there's the crashing noise of the teacups and the teapot. I only know this because of the sounds, but I can't see. It's all faded and blurry.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed Issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.